The other men in the bar had spun away from the action, and now they were crowding back in again, slowly and warily. Reacher turned a menacing circle with the cue held ready. He bent and took the truck keys from Josh's pocket. Then he dropped the cue and let it clatter to the floor and barged his way through the crowd to the door, breathing hard, shoving people out of his way. Nobody seriously tried to stop him. Clearly, friendship had its limits down there in Echo County. He made it into the lot, still breathing fast. The heat broke him out in a sweat instantly. He made it back to the truck, slid inside and fired it up, and backed away from the building and peeled away north. The bar door stayed firmly closed. Nobody came after him. The sun set far away in the west an hour into his drive back, and it was full dark when he turned in under the ranch gate. But every light in the red house was burning, and there were two cars parked in the yard. One was the sheriff's second-hand cruiser. The other was a lime green Lincoln.
This is the end of Side 1. This program is continued on Side 2 of this cassette.
Every light in the red house was burning, and there were two cars parked in the yard. One was the sheriff's second-hand cruiser, the other was a lime green Lincoln. The sheriff's car was flashing red and blue. The Lincoln was lit by the spill from the porch, and the hot yellow light made it look the color of a dead man's skin. There were clouds of moths everywhere, big, papery insects crowding the bulbs above the porch like tiny individual snowstorms, forming and reforming as they fluttered from one to the next. Behind them, the chant of the night insects was already rhythmic and insistent. The front door of the house was standing open, and there was noise in the foyer. Loud, excited conversation from a small crowd of people. Reacher stepped up and looked into the room and saw the sheriff and Rusty Greer and Bobby and then Carmen standing alone near the rack of rifles. She had changed out of her jeans and shirt. She was wearing a dress. It was red and black and had no sleeves. It finished at the knee. She looked numb. Conflicting emotions in her face made it blank and expressionless. There was a man in a suit at the opposite end of the room, standing near the red-framed mirror so Reacher could see the front and back of him at the same time. The Lincoln driver, obviously. He was sleek and slightly overweight, not short, not tall, dressed in pressed seersucker. Maybe 30 years old, with light-colored hair carefully combed and receding from a domed brow. He had a pale, indoor face, red with sunburn on the upward-facing planes, like he played golf in the early afternoon. The face was split into a huge politician's smile. He looked like he had been receiving fulsome accolades and pretending they were completely unnecessary. Reacher paused on the porch and decided not to enter, but his weight put a loud creak into the boards, and Bobby heard it. He glanced out into the night and did a perfect double take, stood completely still for a second, and then came hurrying through the door, took Reacher's elbow and pulled him into the lee of the wall alongside the entrance out of sight of the foyer. "What are you doing here?" he asked.
"I work here," Reacher said. "Remember?"
"Where are Josh and Billy?"
"They quit."
Bobby stared at him.
"They what?"
"They quit,"
Reacher said again.
"What does that mean?"
"It means they decided they didn't want to work here anymore."
"Why would they do that?"
Reacher shrugged.
"How would I know? Maybe they were just exercising their prerogative inside a free labor market."
"What?"
Reacher said nothing. Bobby's absence and the voices on the porch had pulled people to the door. Rusty Greer was first out, followed by the sheriff and the guy in the seersucker suit. Carmen stayed inside, near the rifles, still looking numb. They all fell silent, looking at Reacher. Rusty, like she had a social difficulty to deal with. The sheriff, puzzled. The new guy in the suit, wondering who the hell this stranger was.
"What's going on?" Rusty asked.
"This guy says Josh and Billy quit on us," Bobby said.
"They wouldn't do that," Rusty said. "Why would they do that?"
The guy in the suit was looming forward like he expected to be introduced.
"Did they give you a reason?"
Rusty asked. The sheriff was looking straight at Reacher, nothing in his face. Reacher made no reply, just stood there waiting.
"Well, I'm Hack Walker,"
the guy in the suit said, in a big, honest voice, holding out his hand. I'm the D.A. up in Pecos, and I'm a friend of the family.
Soup's oldest friend,
Rusty said absently. Reacher nodded and took the guy's hand.
Jack Reacher, he said. I work here.
The guy held onto his hand in both of his own and beamed a subtle little smile that was partly genuine, partly, you know how it is, ironic. A perfect politician's smile. You registered to vote here yet? He said. Because if so, I just want to point out I'm running for judge in November, and I'd surely like to count on your support. Then he started up with a self-deprecating chuckle. A man secure among friends, amused about how the demands of democracy can intrude on good manners. You know how it is. Reacher took his hand back and nodded without speaking.
Hacks worked so hard for us, Rusty said, and now he's brought us the most delightful news.
Al Eugene showed up? Reacher asked.
No, not yet, Rusty said. Something else entirely.
And nothing to do with the election, Hacks said. You folks all understand that, don't you? I agree. November time makes us want to do something for everybody, but you know I'd have done this for you anyhow.
And you know we'd all vote for you anyhow, Hack,
Rusty said. Then everybody started beaming at everybody else. Reacher glanced beyond them at Carmen, standing alone in the foyer. She wasn't beaming. You're getting Sloop out early, he said. Tomorrow, I guess. Hack Walker ducked his head like Reacher had offered him a compliment.
That's for sure, he said. All along, they claimed they couldn't do administration on the weekend, but I managed to change their minds. They said it would be the first Sunday release in the history of the system, but I just said, hey, there's a first time for everything.
Hack's going to drive us up there, Rusty said. We're leaving soon. We're going to drive all night.
We're going to be waiting on the sidewalk, Hack said. Right outside the prison gate, 7 o'clock in the morning. Old Sloop's going to get a big welcome.
You all going? Reacher asked.
I'm not,
Carmen said. She had come out onto the porch, quietly, like a wraith. She was standing with her feet together, both hands on the railing, leaning forward from the waist, elbows locked, staring north at the black horizon.
I have to stay and see to Ellie, she said.
Plenty of room in the car, Hack said. Ellie can come, too.
Carmen shook her head.
I don't want her to see her father walking out of a prison door. Well, please yourself, Rusty said. He's only your husband, after all.
Carmen made no reply, just shivered slightly, like the night air was 30 degrees instead of 90.
And I guess I'll stay, too, Bobby said. Keep an eye on things. Sloop will understand.
Reacher glanced at him. Carmen turned abruptly and walked back into the house. Rusty and Hack Walker drifted after her. The sheriff and Bobby stayed on the porch, each taking a half step toward the other to put a subliminal human barrier between Reacher and the door.
So why did they quit? Bobby asked.
Reacher glanced at them both and shrugged.
Well, they didn't exactly quit, he said.
I was trying to sugar the pill for the family was all. Truth is, we were in a bar and they picked a fight with some guy.
You saw us in the bar, right, Sheriff?
The sheriff nodded cautiously.
It was after you left, Reacher said. They picked a fight and lost. Who with? Bobby asked. What guy?
The wrong guy.
But who was he?
Some big guy, Reacher said. He smacked them around for a minute or two. I think somebody called the ambulance for them. They're probably in the hospital now. Maybe they're dead, for all I know. They lost, and they lost real bad.
Bobby stared.
Who was the guy?
Just some guy, minding his own business.
Who?
Some stranger, I guess. Bobby paused.
Was it you?
Me?
Reacher said.
Why would they pick a fight with me?
Bobby said nothing.
Why would they pick a fight with me, Bobby?
Reacher asked again.
What possible kind of a reason would they have for that?
Bobby made no reply, just stared, and then turned and stalked into the house, slammed the door loudly behind him. The sheriff stayed where he was.
So they got hurt bad, he said.
Reacher nodded. Seems that way. You should make some calls, check it out, then start spreading the news. Tell people that's what happens if they start picking fights with the wrong strangers. The sheriff nodded again, still cautious. Maybe it's something you should bear in mind, too, Reacher said. Bobby told me down here folks sort out their own differences. He told me they're reluctant to involve law enforcement people. He implied cops stay out of private disputes. He said it's some kind of a big old West Texas tradition. The sheriff was quiet for a moment.
I guess it might be.
Bobby said it definitely was. A definite tradition. The sheriff turned away.
Well, you could put it that way, he said. And I'm a very traditional guy.
Reacher nodded. I'm very glad to hear it, he said. The sheriff paused on the porch steps and then moved on again without looking back. He slid into his car and killed the flashing lights and started the engine, maneuvered carefully past the lime-green Lincoln, and headed out down the driveway and under the gate. His engine was running rich. Reacher could smell unburned gasoline in the air, and he could hear the muffler popping with tiny explosions. Then the car accelerated into the distance, and he could hear nothing at all except the grasshoppers clicking and chattering. He came down off the porch and walked around to the kitchen door. It was standing open, either for ventilation or so the maid could eavesdrop on the excitement. She was standing just inside the room, close to an insect screen made of plastic strips hanging down in the doorway. Hey, Reacher said. He had learned long ago to be friendly with the cookhouse detail. That way you eat better. But she didn't answer him. She just stood there, warily. Let me guess, he said. You only made 2 suppers for the bunkhouse. She said nothing, which was as good as a yes. You were misinformed, he said. Was it Bobby? She nodded.
He told me you weren't coming back.
He was mistaken, he said. It was Josh and Billy who didn't come back. So I guess I'll eat their dinners, both of them. I'm hungry. She paused, then she shrugged.
I'll bring them down in a minute.
He shook his head. I'll eat them here. Save you the walk. He parted the plastic strips with the backs of his hands and stepped inside the kitchen. It smelled of chili left over from lunchtime. What did you make? He asked.
Steaks, she said.
Good, he said. I like bovines better than edentates.
What?
I like beef better than I like armadillo.
So do I, she said.
She used potholders and took 2 plates out of a warming oven. Each held a medium-sized ribeye steak and a large mound of mashed potato and a smaller mound of fried onions. She put them side by side on the kitchen table with a fork on the left of the left-hand plate and a knife all the way to the right. It looked like a double-barreled meal.
Billy was my cousin, she said.
He probably still is, Reacher said. Josh got it worse.
Josh was my cousin, too.
Well, sorry to hear that.
Different branch of the family, more distant. And they were both fools.
Reacher nodded. Not the sharpest chisels in the box.
But the Greers are sharp, she said. Whatever it is you're doing with the Mexican woman, you should remember that.
Then she left him alone to eat. He rinsed both plates when he finished and left them stacked in the sink. Walked down to the horse barn and sat down to wait in the foul heat inside because he wanted to stay close to the house. He sat on a hay bale and kept his back to the horses. They were restless for a spell, and then they got used to his presence. He heard them fall asleep, one by one. The shuffling hooves stopped moving, and he heard lazy huffs of breath. Then he heard feet over on the boards of the porch, and then on the steps, and then the crunch of dry dust under them as they crossed the yard. He heard the Lincoln's doors open, then shut again. He heard the engine start and the transmission engage. He stood up and stepped to the barn door and saw the Lincoln turning around in front of the house. It was lit from behind by the porch lights, and he could see Hack Walker silhouetted at the wheel with Rusty Greer beside him. The porch lights turned her teased-up hair to cotton candy. He could see the shape of her skull underneath it. The big car drove straight out under the gate and swooped right without pausing and accelerated away down the road. He watched the bright cone of its headlights through the picket fence
bouncing left to right through the darkness. Then it was gone, and the sounds of the night insects came back, and the big moths around the lights were all that was moving.